Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. Later this week, many nations around the world will observe International Women's Day, just as they have for almost four decades. It's a day set aside by United Nations decree to celebrate the accomplishments of women and to remind the world of an ongoing need for full equality for them. In ceremonies here, a tireless advocate for peace, justice, and human rights will be honored for her work over almost half a century. St. Louisan Yvonne Logan has been executive director of the World Community Center for as long as International Women's Day has been celebrated. She's also been involved locally and nationally with the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom and been associated with other social justice causes. I'm Don Marsh. Today, as we look at women in politics and public life, Yvonne Logan joins me in studio, as does Shirley Breeze, longtime women's rights advocate and a member of the Missouri Women's Leadership Coalition. Ladies, thanks very much for being with us today.
Good to be here.
Glad to.
Yvonne, we go back a long way. I'm going to start with you.
We certainly do.
I don't even like to think of how long it's been, but it's great to see you again. Let me start with you, and Cheryl, I'll ask you to answer the same question. What do you think is the biggest challenge facing women today?
I think that violence against women is something that everybody has to be aware of and work on, and it, particularly internationally. We tend to be too concentrated on what happens in the United States, and that's mild against what women have to suffer, particularly when there's a war.
And there's certainly enough of that going on these days. And that's another cause that you've been associated with, I should say, against for a good many years now.
That's right.
Right. Shirley, what about you? Do you agree with Yvonne on that as the biggest challenge facing women today?
Well, that certainly is a big challenge, and I'm not going to minimize that. One of the things, however, that we are most concerned about is women's representation in the political arena. And we think that some of these problems would be solved if women had equal participation, if their thoughts were recognized, if they were allowed to make decisions on an equal basis. And I have just scads of figures that show that women have limited participation in all levels of government.
That's improving somewhat in this country, but there's a long way to go,
right,
obviously. And we'll talk about more about that in a moment. But what do women bring to the table, do you think, that would make a difference if, in fact, there was a greater representation?
Well, of course, I'm prejudiced, obviously, but I think women are more inclined to look at the family situations, at the work-family balance, at some of these not hardcore areas, but the lesser areas that make for a better climate for the home and the workplace and the political arena.
Yvonne, could you elaborate on that? How would you?
Well, I think electing more women has to happen. And to think that we rejoice that 12 women senators were elected, that's out of 100. There are some countries that make it a law for equal representation. I can't remember if it's Sweden or Norway. But yes, the family situation is the one that women would concentrate on. But so much of that depends on poverty. So I think women would be more for equal pay and for regulating our financial institutions so that there'd be more equal income. That has to happen.
You know, I've heard it said, of course it has to be speculated because we don't know, there are now 20 women in the U.S. Senate. I think, that's the correct figure.
All right.
And I don't mean to correct you, but that is the correct figure. I've heard it speculated that if women had a greater degree of political input, that the chance of war, for instance, would be lessened because women are nurturers and they're less likely to take a more aggressive stance. What do you think?
I certainly agree with that. And we can look to some of our heroines, like Eleanor Roosevelt, who was the head of the Commission at the United Nations on Human Rights, which would have made it, did make it possible for women to have more to say. Women don't regard fighting in the same way. They don't want to be heroes. It's and as much as we can, we discourage that kind of feeling.
Shirley, who are today's heroines?
I don't know that we have very many. Personally, mine is Hillary Clinton, but I know a lot of people don't agree with that. But I would have to agree with Yvonne about the war situation. I abhor war, and most women I know do. And I do think that were women given a broader input, we would have less war, less fighting. It would be more mediated kinds of conflicts. But I wanted to go with what you said about France, for instance, has a quota system for its legislative bodies, something like 25%. Many countries, many foreign countries have quota systems. Also, many foreign countries have it written into their constitutions or their laws that there would be an emphasis on getting more women and minorities into the political spectrum. Interesting enough, the three countries with the lowest percentage increase in corporate and political arenas are the U.S., China, and Japan, the big industrial nations. That must say something. I don't know what it says, but it's kind of frightening.
I didn't think it would take too long into our conversation before the name of Hillary Clinton came up. She does have her detractors, to be sure, but it seems to me, just to stay with her for a moment or two, that the number of those detractors has lessened considerably during the 4 years that she's been Secretary of State. Would you agree with that, Yvonne?
Yes, and I think that when she worked for health care early in President Clinton's administration, she was just so sure that it could happen, and she probably went too far. It just wasn't the time. And Obama went into it much more gradually. We may criticize what he is, the affordable health care, but he improved on what she proposed.
And that was, that's already been 20 years ago that
yes.
she did that.
Yeah.
And, of course, our health care, the new Affordable Care Act, has not yet been fully implemented. Talk about, you know, things moving slowly. So,
but it's going to be. I have confidence that it will. The advantages to the states, and this is particularly true, Missouri legislators should listen. The advantages of having Medicaid paid for by the federal government for 3 years are just, you can't get a better deal. And if Missouri doesn't get it, other states will.
Yeah, it's paid in full over 3 years and 90% in the years that follow that, correct?
Yes.
I think that's the way it works. Back to Hillary for one moment, Shirley, and that is... yes, she's gotten high marks for her work as Secretary of State, and there is an awful lot of feeling that even though there's a long way to go, that she's going to be a presidential candidate in 2016. What do you think?
I hope so. I'm pulling for her. We are, of course, again, one of the only nations in the world who has not had a female head of state or president or whatever they call it. 66 different countries have had female chiefs, and, of course, some of the well-known ones, Margaret Thatcher and Indira Gandhi and all those. But there have been many small countries who have had two or three female heads. And I think it's high time that we have a woman at that juncture in our government. It's past due, actually. So I'm really pulling for it. And, you know, maybe somebody else will come. Maybe it won't be Hillary, but that's okay. As long as she is a progressive person, I think that would be fine.
Why have we been so slow to join the rest of the world in this area, Yvonne?
It's hard to say. It could be partly the frontier spirit where men had to be strong and women had to be helpful. It's maybe we're just not as civilized as some of those countries. We're backward. We're just backward in that way.
And yet women are right in the middle of some of the most widely debated issues of the day. I mean, reproductive health rights is a huge issue, ongoing, and people keep talking about it and arguing about it. The violence against women that was mentioned earlier, it took a long time to, even for the House, to pass the Violence Against Women Act. Why do you think they just stopped there for a minute? Why, surely, do you think that was the case? Why was that so debated and contested?
Well, we have this group of people, major group of people in the United States who are very conservative. And they see any, first of all, they really don't believe women need or want or should have equality or rights. And then with the domestic violence legislation, of course, it was changed. It wasn't the original bill that was approved, the Farmer Bill. The Senate approved a new bill, and it included lesbians, it included disabled, it included legal immigrant women, and particularly it included Native American women, who are just absolutely the worst victims of domestic violence that you could even think. So a lot of very conservative, traditional-type people did not like that inclusion.
But we have to point out that many of the conservative people that you're talking about are women.
I think of
Jan Brewer in Arizona, and I think of Sarah Palin, and I think of Nikki Haley.
How about
Haley.
Phyllis Schlafly?
you're going to open an old wound there. I mean, you two went toe-to-toe for a long time over the Equal Rights Amendment back in the early 70s. And I want to bring up the Equal Rights Amendment, too, because there is a lot of talk about reviving that now, and I'm sure this is something you're interested in. But I have to take a break. My guests in studio are longtime women's rights advocates Yvonne Logan and Shirley Breeze. We'll come back and continue our conversation, and we want to get you in on it. Ladies, what do you think? What are the most important unresolved issues for women today? Let us know at 382-8255. That's 382-TALK. You can send us an email at talk@stlpublicradio.org. We'll take a tweet at STL on Air. You can also reach us through Facebook. Back with Yvonne Logan and Shirley Breeze in just a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again, and welcome back to our conversation with women's rights advocates Shirley Breeze and Yvonne Logan. Before we begin, I'd like to just advise our audience that tomorrow in St. Louis on the Air, we'll hear about Ari Shapiro's experiences as NPR's White House correspondent. Our conversation will be recorded late this afternoon, so if you have a question you would like me to ask Ari Shapiro, send an email to talk@stlpublicradio.org or a tweet to STL on Air. By the way, Ari will be speaking tonight at 7 o'clock at the Wool Ballroom at St. Louis University's Bush Student Center, sponsored by the SLU College Democrats and SLU Political Science Club. Doors will open at 6:30. So get your questions to us by email if you have one for Ari Shapiro, NPR's White House correspondent. Okay, let me get back, ladies, to the Equal Rights Amendment. There is a new initiative, and I've got some notes here. I'll just let people know because I haven't heard very much about this. There are currently 35 states that have ratified the ERA, and legal analysis suggests we may need just three more states for women to have equal rights under the Constitution. The states that have not yet ratified the ERA, Alabama, Arizona, Arkansas, Florida, Georgia, Illinois, Louisiana, Mississippi, Missouri, Nevada, North Carolina, Oklahoma, South Carolina, Utah, and Virginia. There is congressional legislation to eliminate deadlines on the original 1972 ERA. So, Shirley, is the ERA back? I mean, is this something that can happen? I know you think it should happen.
It is back. It's been back for several years. We have a national group working on it, committee sort of which I'm a member. And we continue to work on it in Missouri, although the prospects here probably aren't as good as other states. But I was actually in Jefferson City lobbying yesterday, and we have a sponsor in the House, a sponsor in the Senate. We had a hearing scheduled for about 2 weeks ago in the Senate committee, and the snow and all the weather problems canceled it, and we have not got a rescheduled hearing date. But Senator Justice is sponsoring it in the Senate, and Representative Margo McNeil is sponsoring it in the House. And the committees it's been assigned to, of course, will probably not get it out of committee, but our thinking always is that we need to keep it before the public because it is not a dead issue and we are not going to let it die.
There is some question as to whether it is a dead issue in the sense of whether it would be legal to continue that vote. Do you have any sense of that, Yvonne?
Well, the law was that if it didn't get passed in a certain number of years, those original 35 states might not be carried over. So probably this is the Supreme Court has to decide that. So it's not particularly high on the agenda of some groups. We tend to work more for international issues. And in Women's International League, I think abolishing nuclear weapons is our highest priority. It's probably the hardest one, but it is the highest.
And very current also, particularly with regard to what's going on in Iran and North Korea.
Yes, there's been some good news, not very good, but at least a week ago, the conference of diplomats that was talking about more control over Iran's nuclear output ended on an optimistic note. And actually the Iranian diplomat said he thought they were going to solve the issue. Sounded good.
Sounds good, but the proof's in the pudding, as they say.
Yeah.
Lots of things to talk about. We have a number of people who want to get into the conversation, so let's invite them in right now. And Christina in Edwardsville will take you first. Go ahead.
Hi, can you hear me?
Sure.
First of all, I'd like to thank the women on your panel for doing all of the pioneering work that needs to continue with new generations. And my comment is really this. I find that I'm turning 45 years old. It took me to about 20, 25 before I really became engaged politically. And I find, just like in a black community, what I find with the women's community is that people that I talk to during my activism, they are really unaware of their own history. And I think that if there was more of a connectedness to the women that came before them and the groundwork that was laid, people would get more involved, but I just find that they're misinformed. And my last comment is this. I don't know if we fix this and start to fix it by having women's history included in public school curriculum, but I do think that it would help if people were informed. Thank you so much.
Christina, thanks so much for the call. I can't imagine either of you ladies is going to disagree with that.
That's a good comment, and one of the reasons we have International Women's Day and Women's History Month is just for that purpose, to educate people. Otherwise, we don't really have a platform. So when you have a month or a day set aside, then you have all of this paperwork that comes out that educates people, and we have programs across the state, across the nation that educate people. And that's really a big part of the recognition of those two month and day.
Well, how do you feel about that, setting aside a day or setting aside a month? There are people who criticize Black History Month, for instance, saying, okay, so that's great that they have a month, but this is something that really has to be before the public, just as the issues and things that you're talking about here. It's got to be a 12-month deal, 24/7 deal.
Yes, it does, but really, in reality, people have busy lives and everybody is going 10 different directions. And just to isolate a month is wonderful, actually, to get almost a recognition every day in some media form or another.
Right. Did you want to comment, Yvonne?
There was an International Women's Year in 1975. I can't say that it changed a whole lot of things, but at that time there was a women's fair in St. Louis in September, and every women's organization there was contributed to that. And the booth, if you wanted a booth, you had to have a problem-solving booth. Hmm. I saw that in the minutes.
But that's 1 year, and it's more than a generation ago.
And now, when I look back to when I became active, so many more women are employed. They don't have the time for activism. They hardly have time to do most of the things they want to do, have to do. And so those of us who didn't work had a lot more time.
Had a lot more time. Let's go back to the phones and get some more issues on the table here. Dennis is on a cell phone. Dennis, thanks for being so patient. Go ahead.
Hey, no problem. One of your people said that women have a reluctance to be a hero. And when they said that, I think of this one friend of mine, very determined, very strong and accomplished woman, who has on her wall this plaque that reads, "Well-behaved women never make history." And although that strikes me as funny, it's also true. You've got to be a little bit of a hero if you're going to change anything. And I just wanted to add that to the conversation. That immediately came to my mind.
Dennis, thank you so much for the call. I've seen that. I wish I could remember who said that, but it comes up from time to time. Do you have any idea, Shirley?
I do not know. Yeah. Where
it's
thinking?
Often on a bumper sticker.
Well, it needs to be maybe more prominent than on the back of somebody's car. Let's take another call. Regina is joining us from St. Charles. Regina, go ahead.
Yes, thank you very much. I want to say thank you to these ladies for fighting this fight and representing me. As a 60-something-year-old, I just want to say that my concern these days is for the contraception issue and the fact that in this state and in a lot of states, contraception is being sent back about 40 years of a fight that I thought we already fought as women. I'd like to hear some comments about that, please.
Okay, thanks for the call, Regina. Yvonne, would you like to address it?
Well, this isn't a subject that I have worked on, but I realize that it's one of the most important things in that Planned Parenthood should be backed and get money from the state and the federal government for the work they do in providing contraceptives.
Of course, exactly the opposite is taking place,
yes,
or is being lobbied to take place, and that is to cut funding. What about you, Shirley?
Well, I agree with Yvonne. It's just a tragedy that this is even being talked about in this day and age. And there are lots and lots of legislators in Jefferson City who are firmly behind controlling contraception. So it's going to keep going. It's not going to stop this attack on it.
You are going to be talking about the women's political status in 2013 at this event on Sunday, which Yvonne is going to be honored. I'll have more on that in just a couple of moments. Let me ask you then, in view of the things that have been said so far, how do you assess today's political environment? I mean, we all know about the polarization and this extreme stance of both parties, actually. How do you assess where we are right now?
Well, sometimes I get depressed about how far we have to go and what hasn't happened. But then I think back, and we used to have, among other things, want ads that said male only apply here and female only apply here. All of these kinds of things that we no longer have, we are no longer subjected to. We make 77 cents on the dollar, but when I first got into the movement, we were making 59 cents on the dollar. So at least we have risen that amount of income capacity. So there are some bright spots. It's just sometimes difficult to see them through the maze of all this other kind of thing that's happening.
How about you, Yvonne? Thoughts on that?
Well, I'm encouraged by how the election came out and the fact that probably our national leadership is going to go forward a little more courageously. So I'm an optimist. I think the next 4 years at least are going to be better.
What kind of a grade would you give President Obama for his work on the issues and with which you're most concerned?
Very good. He came out early in his administration for abolishing nuclear weapons, hasn't done much since then, but now he's talking about action on nuclear terrorism, which is actually more threatening. So I put him high on that issue.
Well, and just to stay with the nuclear issue for one more minute, we have more calls coming in. There is a lot of speculation about the possibility of Israel, perhaps with American backing, going to war against Iran to stop that project there. You're anti-war and always have been. Would you support that?
No, absolutely not. And I think maybe some of this optimism that came out of this recent meeting could be because Iran is trying to impress Israel with the fact that they don't have to worry about them.
Well, yet there have been many threats over the years.
Yes.
That would maybe negate that. We'll see. Back to you, Shirley, with regard to what kind of a grade would you give President Obama?
That's a really difficult question. He started out, of course, signing the Lilly Ledbetter Pay Act, which we were just really thrilled about. But then things kind of slowed down. So I think that, as Yvonne said, it will pick up in this term since he got reelected. But we were hoping for several more pieces of legislation to pass last session, and they didn't. And I think that he controls, he's able to control a lot of that. But we're obviously delighted he was reelected, so...
Well, Lilly Ledbetter, who's been a guest on this program, by the
yes.
way, and was just charming, really enjoyed
yes.
meeting her. But as you mentioned mm-hmm. a moment ago, women's pay is 79 cents on the dollar for men. So we've got the Lilly Ledbetter Act. So what if it's still 79 cents?
Well, people don't understand really what the Lilly Ledbetter Act was. They think it would solve all the equal pay issues. Well, it didn't. You know, it was a little minor thing that it solved. So we still have major, major pay issues to solve. But Lilly Ledbetter Act prevented employers from having a deadline on reporting unequal pay. In other words, Lilly didn't find out until 20 years later that she'd been not being paid the same over 20 years.
And as a man doing the same job.
Right, as a man doing the same, at Goodyear. She worked at Goodyear. Now, and the law was based, or the thinking was based, on 180 some days. That was the length. Well, you know, how do you ever know that? You can't find it out because you're not supposed to talk about salaries. So now... that's extended indefinitely. And that was the only part of the equal pay situation that addressed. So we're working on some additional pieces of legislation.
Yeah, people have falsely assumed that mm-hmm. meant that women would be paid
right.
the same as
right.
men, period,
wrong.
End of report. Yeah, it's a different situation. By the way, our crack producer Alex Hoyer has come up with this. The phrase is, "Well-behaved women seldom make history," written by Laurel Thatcher Ulrich in 1976. She's a historian of early America and the history of women and a professor at Harvard University. The phrase was originally in an academic paper but is now a book of the same title. There are several other versions, so that has been cleared up. We're getting close to time to take another break. Let me see if we can get another telephone call in before I have to do that. And we'll take Judith calling from University City. Go ahead, Judith.
Yes, I also had the answer to the well-behaved women. Just like to add that you can buy shirts with that phrase on it at the History Museum. However, I also wanted to speak about the women and heroism. I believe one of your guests made that comment within the context of war and why women are less likely to want to go to war, not wanting to be heroes. But I would like to suggest that any woman who pushes the envelope a little bit against the status quo can and is heroic, and that maybe our first reaction to what the term hero means might have to do with a war hero or even a sports hero. But I think if we think more deeply, we can understand that a hero is anyone who, for the cause of justice and good, fights against the status quo. And in that case, women can be and are heroes.
Judith, thank you so much for the call. Yvonne, do you want to comment on that? You qualify as a hero, by the way. Both of you do, under her definition.
Well, I completely agree with her. And I've known many women who are heroes. One of them is Mary Hall, for whom the seminar on Sunday is named for. She's still alive, and she once worked with Jane Addams. And she's, of course, she's a Nobel Peace Prize winner.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, women can be heroes.
Comment, Shirley?
I agree.
I thought you might. We have to take a break. We'll do that now and continue our conversation with Yvonne Logan and Shirley Breeze, women's rights advocates. We're coming up on the event of the International Women's Day, which is going to be later this week. I think in some places it's Friday, but there's an event being held here on Sunday, in which Yvonne Logan is going to be given a nice honor. We'll talk about that when we come back. And we want more of your calls. Those waiting, we'll be right back to take them. So stay with us. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again, and welcome back as we continue our conversation with longtime women's rights advocates Yvonne Logan and Shirley Breeze. I wanted to take a call from Carolyn. It called a moment ago, but it has left us. Carolyn, come on back if you would give us a call, and I'll take it as soon as you return, because you had something that I think we would like to talk about. Meantime, as we're waiting for Carolyn, let's go to Elizabeth in St. Louis. Elizabeth, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. I'm going to just make two comments. My first is I am 50. My mother is almost 80, and I grew up in Brooklyn, New York, in a very progressive household where I just took for granted all of the things that my mother was fighting for, all the things that my mother stood for. And I've been living in St. Louis, working in Illinois for many years, since 87, and I'm just always shocked and surprised at how backward things are still. I don't think people who live in big cities realize how so many parts of our country are small towns where people have small attitudes about women. And I think that we just, as with the Holocaust and with other important issues, we have to continue to teach our little girls and our children all about all the things that our parents fought for. I don't think they really understand it. I don't think they really get it. And my second comment is regarding the well-behaved women not being heroes. I think that even perpetuates why should women be well-behaved? Why it just baffles me. I don't get it. Help me out here.
All right, go ahead, Shirley. You're chuckling.
Well, I've never been well-behaved my whole life, so I can certainly identify with that. But I think it is true that to be in the women's movement or any major movement, you have to just be a little bit on the edge or you're not going to get anywhere. So I think that we should not be well-behaved.
What do you think, Yvonne?
Well, I think she's talking about how backward we are, perhaps, in Missouri. I think if women joined more organizations, when we first came here, we had been I'd been told, join the League of Women Voters. That's the first thing I did. And worked in Kirkwood to open stores to employment. I mean, I didn't know about it until I joined them. There are so many women's organizations that you can join and find people that sympathize with your point of view. So don't say we're conservative until you've investigated all that.
But as one of you pointed out a little while ago, women are working now. They have less time than they might have had, certainly in your day, Yvonne. You didn't work. You were at home, and you had the time to do it. That's a big part of the problem.
But you can still pay dues and join and get their newsletters and occasionally write a letter to your senator or your representative.
It is true that young women, there's a different profile for them, and they don't take well to going to monthly meetings and sitting and talking about things. They want action. So I think one of the solutions and what we're constantly trying to do is to do that model where we have projects or we have something that they can do for a month and then they're over with it. They just don't want to sit and talk about structure and talk about bylaws and all of that. And perhaps they're on to something. We wasted a lot of time on bylaws.
You know, I when this conversation comes up, I always think of Harriet Woods and how she started. And her whole career started because there was a manhole cover
right.
that was noisy outside of her house, and she didn't. Mm. She was mad as hell and didn't want to take it anymore and didn't. And the rest of her story, of course, is history.
It was waking up her three boys.
That's right.
From their afternoon naps, and she was just marched right down to City Hall, told them what she thought.
And got things done. She probably wasn't very well behaved during that.
Right.
Let's take another call. Bob in Millstadt, thanks for waiting. You're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I see the major barrier to passing the Equal Rights Amendment or to equal treatment for women as being the separation of church and state. Right now, and what Phyllis Schlafly used was the social issues to defeat the Equal Rights Amendment. Unless we can keep the separation of church and state, it's going to be a very difficult movement to re-energize. Also, just one more thing. PBS had a special called The Makers that's been on for the past week or so. It's a three-hour special that is truly outstanding in projecting the women's movement. Thank you.
Bob, thank you so much for the call. You were nodding throughout, Shirley.
Unfortunately, Bob is right that separation of church and state is a major, major, major issue. And it's rearing its ugly head in Jefferson City as we speak. What they're doing is attaching bills or filing bills that have some aspect of religion, and usually Christianity, to them, like prayer in the schools and all that kind of thing, which really has no place in public legislation, is not appropriate, and it is a scary trend, actually.
Well, so the political process, some people have said, in some ways has been hijacked by the prominence of the social issues, that we get wrapped up in this, these things, and let the more important issues, which many consider the more important issues, just kind of slip beneath the waves.
Well, a lot of people don't realize that the Constitution says we should separate and they become passionate about an issue. They may hear about it even in their church. And they don't realize that that's not part of our Constitution.
It is not part of the Constitution. In fact, I think the term separation of church and state only came up in a letter that Thomas Jefferson wrote to someone, I think to John Adams. So it is not in the Constitution per se, although religious independence, of course, is.
Yeah.
Okay, let's take a call from Jerry in O'Fallon. Jerry, go ahead. You're on the air.
Well, good morning. You segued right in talking about Jefferson City, but I want to focus on just one issue. You know, so far the Senate and House have essentially blocked any attempt to expand Medicaid, and we're going to have several hundred thousand people in the state that will no longer be eligible for it. And I hear the most ridiculous arguments about, well, we don't like big government, or, you know, we can't afford to because in some far-off date the federal government's going to reduce what they spend. But the bottom line is, and I don't have a figure, I wish we'd have somebody who could come up with this, I'm sure it's out there, for every dollar that is spent in prenatal care, because I think this affects women and children more than anyone else, is going to save, you know, a multiple of that down the road. Not to mention the human misery, but I don't expect most of our legislature to even acknowledge that. But that's the kind of thing that I wish we heard more facts whenever you hear someone talk about this ideology of they want a smaller government. It's like, this is really going to cost us more in the end, because we're going to wind up paying for people who are not covered one way or another. And again, I just think this is very appropriate because it does affect women and children more than anyone else. Thank you.
Sure. Jerry, thanks so much for the call. Again, Shirley, this is something you've been involved in. Is there any way that you can see that Missouri legislature is going to reverse what appears to be a clear path to just not accepting that part of the Affordable Care Act?
Well, there is hope that they may reverse their thinking. When I was out there yesterday, we heard some vibes along those lines. But the real fact of the matter is that in many states, and Missouri is not alone. I was in Arkansas over the weekend, and I heard their tragedy stories too. There is a feeling in many state legislatures that are, of course, predominantly men, that they want to hold power over the lesser populations, women, children, minorities, whatever you throw out. And it's not all men and it's not all people, but it's enough of those that control the power that it's very frightening, and it's coming to pass, actually.
Things haven't changed much in that regard, Yvonne.
No. Well, and also there's a part of it is social criticism. The women and children who will benefit most are many of them single parents, premature children. Their troubles are the result of perhaps not their fault, poverty, their social, well, they're the victims, and it's not, they didn't do anything.
Do you think that women who are prominent get a fair rap from the media? You know, I'm thinking right now of what's going on with Yahoo. I don't know if you have been mm-hmm. following that with the chief executive, mm-hmm. Melissa Meyer, mm-hmm. who has called all of her employees mm-hmm. back to the ranch, as it were, no longer working at mm-hmm. home. And this is affecting a lot of women who were working at home because they were taking care of children. While she built a $250,000 nursery right next to her office. She's taken a lot of heat for that. There are other reasons why she wants people in the office. Thinks they'll be more productive, and a mm-hmm. contact will create more ideas and that sort mm-hmm. of thing. Do you think she's getting a fair rap on this, Shirley?
As people are opposed to what she's doing? Or?
Yeah, well, whatever. I mean, she's been singled out. Uh-huh. She's a woman, obviously, uh-huh. and she's been taking a lot of heat. I don't know whether she's right or wrong, but I wonder if a man would get the same kind of attention.
Well, I don't know that particular part, but I do know that that's a tragedy, what she's doing, because, first of all, it will force some of those women to quit. I mean, if you don't have child care and your kid gets sick, what are you going to do, put him out on the street or something, or leave him home alone? It's just a fact of life that when you have two working parents or you have a single mother with some children, that they're going to be emergencies, and the mother is going to take care of her children or whatever that is, and the job is going to fall by the wayside, and we're going to have another woman who is then in poverty or can't make ends meet, or, you know, the whole scene. So I really think it's the wrong trend to do it that way, and that's, you know, my personal opinion, but a lot of people agree with that.
What do you think, Yvonne?
I agree.
Let's talk for a moment about the media and the media's overall treatment of women. Do you, again, think that that women and women's issues are treated fairly? Yvonne, I'll start with you.
Well, at least we don't have a women's page anymore of the newspaper. But some women are treated well and some are not. If you're not well behaved, you get criticized more than perhaps a man would. The media is doing a lot better than it used to, but it's not perfect.
Shirley?
The Journalism Review, I think they're calling themselves Missouri Journalism Review now, just this last issue came out with a whole chart about women in media, and the statistics are terrible. Mm-hmm. And then I've seen a couple of other such things nationwide, but one of the most interesting I saw the other day is that even in death, women don't get recognition, because they did a survey of some of the major newspapers that profiled people who died, you know, and there were, I don't know, 95% men and 5% women. So one of the organizations I'm working with, each year we have a recognition of women who have died, prominent women who have died, who didn't get any recognition in the press. But it is a big problem with the media.
Well, large. I brought that up because I wanted to throw Rush Limbaugh's name out there because I thought maybe, you know, how disruptive are the kind of comments he makes about feminazis and things like that to what you ladies are trying to do?
Well, we know it's very bad for our issues. I don't listen to any of those commentators, so I don't even hear what they're saying. But they're quoted widely, and they're listened to widely. And, yes, they're very bad for women's issues.
I agree wholeheartedly. And of course, everybody knows that Rush Limbaugh got a statue in our state capitol last May or so. We fought it and fought it, wrote letters and called and did whatever, but nobody would stop it. So there he is amidst Mark Twain and all the others.
By the way, if folks would like to take a look at what you were talking about earlier, Shirley, with regard to the study that was done concerning women in media, that's in the Gateway Journalism Review is the new title of that particular publication, and folks can find it there. We have only a little over a minute left. A final thought from you, Yvonne. What point do you want people to take away from this discussion?
Well, I want women and men to educate their daughters to want more than they have now. To tell daughters, granddaughters, to work for the issues that are important to them.
Thank you for that. And Shirley, how about you?
That's a very good statement, Yvonne made. I think that everyone, men and women, should be very, very aware of what happens in your legislative body and the federal legislative bodies and pounce on it. You know, don't allow something to happen and not voice your opinion.
All right. We'll leave it at that. Yvonne Logan, thank you so much for being with us. Shirley
Glad
Breeze, thank
here.
You for being with us. The United Nations Association of St. Louis is hosting an event on Sunday, which I alluded to earlier, honoring Yvonne Logan, during which Shirley Breeze will speak on women's political status in 2013. That's going to be happening Sunday at 3 o'clock at the Ethical Society on Clayton Road. We have information on our website and a link to the UN Association of St. Louis's website, so you can find out more. And again, Yvonne Logan, congratulations to you for that nice honor that you'll be receiving on Sunday. Shirley, thank you so much for being with us. Tomorrow on St. Louis on the Air, as we've mentioned, we'll hear about Ari Shapiro's experiences as NPR's White House correspondent. Since our conversation will be recorded late this afternoon, if you have a question you'd like me to ask him, send an email to talk@stlpublicradio.org or tweet us at STL on Air. Ari will speak tonight at 7 in the Wool Ballroom at St. Louis University's Bush Student Center, sponsored by the SLU College Democrats and SLU Political Science Club. Doors will open at 6:30. Archived versions of past St. Louis On the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org. St. Louis On the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Don Marsh.